From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Araspeña with your state and local news update. Help is on the way for Juneau residents who need financial relief. The Juneau Assembly voted yesterday to pay out more individual grants in addition to those paid out last year. Assemblymember Michelle Hale says the money is for Juneau's lowest income residents.
Those people often fall through all the cracks. They don't qualify for unemployment often. They've been impacted by having to take care of children. So those are the people that I want to get that money to.
One of the no votes was Assemblymember Lauren Jones. He says the $700,000 used to make the payments is the last of the CARES Act money that Congress passed in the first round of pandemic relief.
This is a tough one to object to, but there is still a lot of unknowns. This is money that was given to the city from the first round of federal CARES funding. The second round provided no additional monies for cities or municipalities. So this is spending the last of our money.
The other no vote was Mayor Beth Weldon, who said she would have liked the city to wait. She also says residents will soon have another opportunity for relief from state aid through the Alaska House Financing Corporation. Assemblymember Alicia Hughes-Scandes said it wasn't just about facts and figures, but prioritizing relief.
I cannot let the individuals who are most economically vulnerable in our society be the people that we say, I will wait and see before I provide aid to you.
Instead of a first-come, first-served approach, the money will go directly to the lowest-income earners who applied for the Individual Assistance Program last year. People who received the city's housing assistance grant last year are ineligible for this round. Base grants range from $500 to $1,000. Each dependent child is worth an extra $300. About 2,300 people applied for the individual assistance grants, and about 1,200 are eligible for this added round of payments. And six people have been chosen to lead a new systemic racism review committee. The Juneau Assembly picked the final members yesterday. The committee will review proposed laws and advise the Assembly if they include a policy or implication that is racist. This comes 8 months after the Assembly approved the creation of the new committee following local protests inspired by nationwide anti-racist demonstrations. David Russell Jensen and Kelly Patterson were selected for three-year terms. Grace Lee, Lisa Whirl, and Gail Dabalus were picked for two-year terms. Dominique Branson and Carla Kosulukan are on the committee for one-year terms. In other news, Sitka has become a hotspot for landslide research since a deadly landslide hit the town in 2015. Much of that work has focused on landslide mitigation, including developing a landslide warning system. But as KCAW's Aaron McKinstry reports, a recent study in the Tongass headed in a different direction to examine how landslides impact the global carbon cycle.
How carbon moves around our planet is of particular interest to the scientific community, says researcher Bryce Vasek.
Part of that because carbon in the atmosphere is contributing to global warming, and we want to understand carbon pools and where carbon is stored and how carbon is transferred from, say, the vegetation to the oceans and to the atmosphere.
Vasek received his master's degree in geology from Portland State University last fall, and for his thesis, he honed in on a little-studied part of the carbon cycle, landslides.
Carbon-mobilizing events by landslides is not a super-studied area. It's sort of a niche field within the carbon cycle.
The Tongass National Forest is one of the largest forest carbon sinks in the world. That's because its soils and vegetation, despite intensive logging in some areas, have been largely undisturbed by human activities in comparison to other places. Vasek says that made it an ideal setting for his research.
Because landslides occur pretty much annually within the Tongass National Forest, and it's very carbon dense. So it's a pretty ideal natural laboratory.
Through a combination of fieldwork, remote sensing technology, and computer work, Vasek estimated the amount of carbon being moved around by landslides in southeast Alaska. He found a single storm that triggers multiple slides can move as much carbon stored in vegetation and soils as the annual emissions from 45,000 vehicles. But it doesn't necessarily go into the atmosphere. Instead, much of it is deposited in valleys or further down hillsides where it gets buried and sequestered for long periods of time. About 20% ends up in water, including rivers, which can then carry it to the ocean's continental shelf and bury it for millions of years. It's possible that landslides actually help keep carbon out of the atmosphere. But Vasek says more data is needed before they can say that for sure.
I wanted to be like, look, the carbon's being moved by the landslides, and if enough is being moved and buried, then this is good for humans in the context of global warming. But there isn't enough research as to what occurs to the carbon after it is mobilized and deposited.
Vasek's research was part of a broader study funded by the National Science Foundation that looked at how landslides and the characteristics of forests influence one another. Portland State University's Adam Booth headed up that project in partnership with the Sitka Sound Science Center. He was also Vasek's thesis advisor and says Vasek's work is part of a broader effort to understand how climate change, the carbon cycle, and landslides interact.
How does changing temperature and precipitation affect landslides? How do those landslides affect carbon? And then ultimately, over a long time, what that carbon mobilized by the landslides is doing, where it goes, where it ends up getting deposited, affects Earth's global climate carbon cycle over geologic time periods.
Vasek says he plans to publish his study in a biogeosciences journal in the next few months, so the data can be available to other researchers looking at landslides and the carbon cycle around the world. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
The State of Alaska's Investment Authority Board has agreed to put $35 million towards the controversial Ambler Road project. The funding is matched by Ambler Metals, the mining company looking to use the road to access mineral deposits in the region. For Alaska's Energy Desk, Wesley Early reports.
With the $35 million match from Ambler Metals, the $70 million infusion signals a major advancement in the development of the Ambler Road. The proposed project would run roughly 211 miles from the Dalton Highway to the Ambler Mining District in the Northwest Arctic Borough. Ambler Metals CEO Ramzi Fawaz says the funding is for pre-development work on the project. He says the permitting process will start sometime in the second half of the year, and he anticipates the process will take 2 to 3 years.
Permitting is one of those activities that get done in addition to the feasibility study and the surveys and so on. So that's part of the work that we need to do and the team needs to do before we get to an investment decision for the road.
The development agreement approved unanimously between the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority and Ambler Metals goes through December 2024. Subsistence advocates have filed lawsuits over the road, concerned that construction would impact the migration of caribou, a staple of the local Inupiaq diet in northwest Alaska. In its environmental assessment released last March, BLM officials noted potential impacts to wildlife migration and erosion, as well as local water and air quality. The process of getting a mine in the Ambler Mining District has garnered support from the Dunleavy administration and mining advocates, who say the project means high-paying jobs for Alaskans. Fawaz says they anticipate hiring more than 80 people for the field season work. Additionally, should construction be approved, another roughly 600 people would be hired for the construction of the road, and then about 400 for operations at the mine. Fawaz says Ambler Metals has been working with the local Nana Regional Native Corporation and the Northwest Arctic Borough in order to get locals employed.
Our hope and our aim is to train and recruit as many as we can from the borough, from the region, from our neighbors, to participate in this work, both before we get to an investment decision and after.
With large deposits of gold, silver, lead, and other minerals, Fawaz says the current projection is that the mine would last for 12 years. He says Ambler Metals hopes to find additional mineral deposits in the region to extend its lifetime to over 20 years. Lois Epstein is an engineer and Arctic Program Director for the Wilderness Society, a conservation group that is one of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit over the road. She says that AIDA's board of directors was not transparent in their process for approving the funding. During their meeting Wednesday, the board was in executive session for several hours to discuss the project ahead of the vote, but those sessions aren't open to the public. Epstein says the board spent very little time discussing the move publicly before returning to an executive session.
So if you're interested in all what kind of questions were asked, what kinds of details they focused on, did they even pay attention to the public comment period? You have no idea.
Epstein says environmentalists and some Alaska Native organizations have also critiqued the timing of Ada's focus on the Ambler Road project, considering the COVID-19 pandemic, which has financially impacted thousands of Alaskans.
That was Wesley Early with KTOZ in Kotzebue, and this is KTOO News.